From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much. So much going on. Appreciate it. We're closer and closer to feeling like spring-like weather here in the Northeast. We're following what's happening with the bridge and the Francis Scott Key Bridge going down. I cannot believe how much it plays such a central role in our supply chain. It's the only port now that will be able to take hazardous material. And it's the barge loses power, just plows into the bridge and takes it out. And it's going to take a while. They have not done anything that I could tell. They're still doing the search and rescue. So we'll keep you up to date on what's happening. Governor, mayor, everybody out there, the president pledging to help. If it was me, right now, I would have designers at the White House. So I need you to hear by Thursday. The best bridge designers. Use the Oval Office. I need this done. I need work to start. How soon is it going to take? When? Let's sign off on a design on Friday, and let's get this going right away. Then you get the debris people in. That's somebody that wants to take charge. And the governor could be doing it, too, from his mansion. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Diversity of opinion is incredibly important, I think, no matter how much you might disagree with someone. And there really do seem to be double standards here. I mean, when 10 out of the 14 previous White House press secretaries have left government and taken jobs at TV networks, it's hard to see why else that they'd have a problem now with Ron McDaniel.
Yeah, that is Scarlett McGuire on Fox News at night. She is weighing in. Who's running the NBC asylum? A talent mutiny, defamed, diminished, personally attacked, and destroyed former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel. And now management has caved and unhired her. And guess what? CAA has said, we're walking away from you. Get ready for Ronna lawsuits. What it says about the media in America is the bigger story.
Number two.
The Democrats are concerned for two big reasons. First, Biden is having a very hard time just holding on to his base, which is why they've been so far to the left so far with the campaign. The second thing is that RFK Jr. is actually much closer to Joe Biden on policy than he is with Donald Trump.
That is true. 2024, an Obama intervention, just as the Trump trial is about to get underway, as he leads in almost every battleground state, making things worse for Joe. RFK is to stay and just named a running mate. So they need Obama now.
Number one.
We have a real recidivist problem. These two individuals, one of the men had been arrested on a gun charge in April 2023, the driver. He has more than 20 priors. Recidivism is a real issue.
That is so true, Mayor Adams, but more than that. You got bail reform is a huge issue. Nobody stays in jail because the reform's made in Albany. Breaking Point, a gray cop slain, a subway passenger shoved to his death, and career criminals are to blame. Countless civilians arbitrarily punched. Americans have had enough of our lawless streets. This is all, we're doing this. We allowed this to happen when no cash bail came out. They said it's not fair that rich people get to post bail and other people that do the same crime don't. Okay, in those few situations, that has not been the case. You know, white-collar criminals with a lot of money aren't cleaning out CVS. You know, they're not punching people in the street. They're not throwing them in front of subway cars. So the whole thing on its surface doesn't add up. And this guy, Carl Hasty, in New York in particular, he's a leading legislator, speaker. He said he doesn't believe that incarceration is a deterrent on crime. He says, if you keep dealing with penalties, what happens after they're arrested? Is there a dumber statement ever made? I'm not sure. Commissioner Pat Ryder came in today. Now, why is it specific? Not only is he a police commissioner who sounded off about the possibility that bail reform would put us all in jeopardy. He did it in 2019 when Governor Cuomo signed it. But he's talking about Jonathan Diller. Jonathan Diller is from Long Island, Nassau County, where he is police commissioner. He actually is one town over from him over in Massapequa. Jonathan Diller, he looks to be an extraordinary cop. He had 70 collars in 3 years, 31 years old with a one-year-old. Families all over police. So he walks up to a car that's parked in a bus lane in Queens. He said, the guys are just hanging out there. What's going on? Let me walk over and check it out. So he checked it out. Sure enough, he had great instincts. One of the people there is this guy, Guy Rivera, 21 prior arrests, 9 arrested for felonies, released from prison September 21, 2021, after serving nearly 5 years. He was on parole. His parole ended in 2023. He's with Lindy Jones, 14 prior arrests, served 10 years for attempted murder and robbery, arrested for second-degree criminal possession of a weapon on April 2023. Together, they got out on $75,000 bail. Together, they're just hanging out. And then when he told them to move, they said no, and then pulled out a gun and killed him right on the spot. Pat Ryder, cut 6.
So first of all, on behalf of Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman, the Nassau County Police Department, our condolences to the Dilla family and the entire NYPD family. There is no such thing as a routine car stop. Anybody who ever says it has never done it or walked in the shoes of a officer in the police department. Every time you stop a car, there's a chance that your life could be taken.
That's Pat Ryder this morning. With me right now is Carly Shimkus. You talked to Commissioner Ryder this morning. So it's interesting. He's an NYPD. You have the victim here, this police officer, 31 years old. His name is Jonathan Diller. And I thought the Nassau County Police Chief would be great to have on because, number one, and for some reason, the NYPD doesn't cooperate with us since Ray Kelly was there. And number two, Carly, this is one town from him. He's in Wantagh. I'm in Massapequa. This resonates. He says they expect at his memorial service over 100,000 cops, people,
yeah.
Most of which are cops and firefighters. So this is a big deal. And these guys, they spent their whole life in prison just killing and robbing and attempted murder.
Yeah, so there were two people involved in this. One was the driver, the other was the passenger. Jonathan Diller and his partner, it was what they call a routine traffic stop, right? None of it is ever routine. Asked the guys to get out of the car. They didn't. And the worst possible thing happened. He had a bulletproof vest on, Brian, but the guy shot him in the stomach right below the bulletproof vest. And this, gosh, this certain news stories you never forget. And I think for this is going to be one of them for me because I keep on thinking about his wife because
have a child.
They have a 1-year-old baby and I do too. So that means that we were pregnant at the exact same time. And I can only imagine because I just putting myself and I'm sure everybody listening right now can do the same. You put yourself in their shoes and you think about that woman who now has to raise this child on her own. And every time she looks at this beautiful baby, she's going to be thinking about her husband going, you should be doing this with me. And this is a big deal because it was preventable. Between the two of them, the driver and the passenger, they had been arrested 35 times. And the driver was out on bail for having a loaded gun, a gun charge. It's like these people are flashing red and they're telling everybody, we're going to commit another crime, and then the people in charge aren't listening.
What I think is a big joke is Governor Cuomo, now out on a rehab tour, starts to tell people, yeah, we got to start cracking down on crime. He's the one who did the nil bail.
He
could have stood up and used, charismatic guy could say, my party has just handed me something I can't sign off on. And he would have got people on Long Island and upstate New York to rally around him. Here's more from the commissioner. So I asked him, what could be done? All we do is complain. What could be done? Cut 8.
I don't think the people in Albany get it. I don't think they're ever going to get it. I think that we have to put pressure on Albany to make changes. It's got to come from the other local politicians that are out here. You heard Mayor Adams yesterday, and he came out in against bail reform, against things that are hurting his community here in New York City, hurting his cops. Bad guys deserve to be in jail. That's where they belong. Let's keep them there.
Yeah, and it's just not happening. He said it reminded him of the 80s.
Yeah, so I spoke to Jim Quinn. He's a former executive DA in Queens. He was in that position for 42 years. He was in the DA's office. And he said that bail reform passed.
When did you talk to him on Fox Friends First?
Yes. He said that bail reform passed in 2019. Since then, crime has gone up by 30%. So all of these city council members who are saying, well, look at the crime statistics. It's down 2% this year. Really? Look at the overall trend. That's not a win. And the thing is that they have the statistics. They know that crime is up overall. So wouldn't you say to yourself, our constituents are dying? Maybe we thought that this was a compassionate way to go, but the numbers prove otherwise. But it just becomes so political. People are dying on their watch, and it's like they don't care.
They don't care. So Governor Hogue goes, listen, I'd like to make some changes. And they said no. Carl Hissey said no. These other people that came up with it said no. So Alvin Bragg doesn't do anything. So this is where we're at. But we got Donald Trump. We have a 7-week trial on Donald Trump.
Yeah, that's right.
And Danny Penny.
Yeah.
This fall, he'll
be
on trial.
And one of the big things right now is subway crime. On the same day that this police officer was killed, this passenger, he was in his 40s, he gets pushed onto the tracks and killed by another repeat offender who was mentally unstable. And it was a completely there was no motive for it. It was a completely random crime. All of a sudden, you're just standing there on the subway platform waiting to go on the train, and then you're pushed onto the tracks, and the car couldn't stop in time.
The psycho is called Carlton McPherson, 24. He got off an uptown train at East 125th Street in Lexington and stood on the platform for just a matter of minutes before allegedly lunging at his victim. We have to say allegedly. According to the witness and a source familiar with the case, he timed it perfectly. The guy died. So that's where we're at right now. Here's Aaron Cohen. A former, believe it or not, cop and Israeli special operating officer. Cut 10.
The correlation that you made between crime here in the United States and Israel is spot on. When it comes to responding to terrorism, Sean, we don't move backwards when it comes to counter-terror response. We have an expression in Hebrew, "Ein achora b'lechama b'terror," which means when a terror attack happens or unfolds anywhere within Israel, whether it's at a mall or at a Sparrow's Pizza, those officers are immediately on those threats, and they're shooting to neutralize that terrorist to keep his hands from moving. And with the crime in New York and with that officer who was shot, those vehicle approaches are just as dangerous, and they need to be given the tools to be able to protect themselves in the event that they have to go from passive to active very quickly.
And Sean was obviously going to break.
We aren't going to break.
No.
Sean was. No, it's so true. And Mayor Adams, I mean, he really does say a lot of good things. And during this press conference yesterday, he said that the criminals do not fear police officers anymore. One of the reasons because of that is that there are a lot of cop killers since 2017. It's been like 70 or so, 47, actually. There's a 7 in there who've been let out of prison. I think that if you kill a cop, then it should be an automatic life sentence, because there needs to be that fear for authority. They are putting the uniform on to defend all of us.
Instead, they're getting out on parole.
Instead, they're getting out on parole. Exactly. Or they're, you know, serving their 20 years and then they get let out.
Right.
So I think that should be an automatic life sentence. But and then maybe if that were the case, this 31-year-old Jonathan Diller, handsome guy, young family, lives in your town.
Yeah.
Is dead.
All right, Carly's got a few more minutes with me. And then you talk about a sentence. This is a long time to be talking to me. I mean, you had me 3 hours on Fox and Friends.
Well, it was like, you know, I just did Fox and Friends first and then 3 hours of Fox and Friends. And then when it was over, I was like,
what do I do?
Yeah. Because, you know, you're so locked in and I was excited about the news and then all of a sudden it's over. So I practically had to beg you to come on.
Right. And I answered affirmatively.
Thank you.
I'm always anxious to have you on, Carly.
Oh, that's sweet. Happy to be here.
When we come back, more Carly. Then Rich Lowry, I want to get his take on RFK and no labels a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
What they said to you about a possible RFK candidacy be going to the no labels
ticket. Very interesting stuff.
Back in a moment.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Don't you want to vote for a candidate and a country that you can be proud of? I know you do, because 70% of Americans say that they don't want to have to choose between President Trump and President Biden. They don't want to choose between the lesser of two evils again. They especially don't want to choose between the two men who brought us the $34 trillion debt, the endless wars, the censorship, the corrupt merger of state and corporate power.
Okay. Everything. He only had one hit on Trump on that. Anything Trump did on the deficit. Most of the deficit spending was done with Trump, was done at the after the pandemic. That was RFK yesterday naming a running mate. And everyone says, okay, what? Nicole Shanahan? I don't know. You know, she's very liberal. and she is somebody who was married to the head of Google, and she's very confident. She'll be stepped forward, and she'll provide a lot of money. But Carly Shimkus is here. Carly, you just talked to the head of No Labels. Now, the thing is, he's on one state.
Yeah.
He's in Utah. Mm-hmm. Some of these states will not look at you unless you have a running mate. So having said that, did you ask the No Labels head what he thought about RFK?
Yeah, so Lawrence did. Joe Cunningham, national director of No Labels. He's a former Democrat congressman from South
Carolina.
They're
in 18 states?
Yeah. And he said that there's conversations about that, which actually surprised me because I don't think that RFK Jr.'s politics align with the No Labels agenda.
Because they want bipartisan.
No Labels is like supposed to be a moderate type of deal. And unless No Labels' ultimate goal is just to get a third party candidate in there to give people a different option. I didn't think it was that. I thought, the third party thing, but it's also a moderate candidate, which is why they're looking at like a Mitt Romney, Joe Manchin type deal. That's not RFK Jr. RFK Jr. is like way to the left. There are two issues where RFK Jr. aligns with Trump supporters. One of them is the government censorship thing, and to
the border.
A lesser extent. Well, he's talking about that now, but that's not really what he's known for. To a lesser extent, the vaccine stuff, because of everything that happened with COVID, a lot of Trump supporters don't trust
vaccines. He also doesn't want to support Ukraine.
That's what I'm talking about. Like it's so that the Ukraine stance wouldn't align with a more moderate position, right? So, and then everything else that RFK Jr. really stands for is super left. I mean, that his position on climate change, that's really his whole thing. I mean, if you listen to his announcement for Nicole Shanahan yesterday, his campaign, it's very unconventional. He spent the most time talking about getting pesticides out of foods. Like, that's fine, but if that's what you care about, be a lobbyist.
Right.
You're going to run for president on that issue?
I hear you. Or, I don't know, do something with Trump. I don't know. Who do you think it hurts more?
Well, the polling right now shows that he definitely pulls more from Joe Biden. And that's why there's this, the Axios report that said that the Biden campaign and the DNC, they're running like this whole operation to take RFK Jr. down. And I'm torn between thinking that that's like a sign of desperation in terms of where Joe Biden stands right now, or just a really smart strategy. And I think it's probably both.
Look, he's got 18%.
That's a big number for a third-party candidate with, like, niche opinions on a
lot
of things.
They should be worried about Jill Stein and Cornel West, because 2% could be a difference in all these states.
And so then you think, like, is RFK Jr. a really, like, an actually serious candidate? And if you listen to him and where he thinks his pathway forward is, you could kind of see where something there could happen, because he's at 18% in some polls. Overall, I think Real Clear Politics has him at low double digits.
Mm-hmm.
But he says that in swing states, if he just gets to 30%, which, I mean, that's a double what he has right now, he could really make a difference. And then you start to say, whoa, wait a second. Maybe the Biden campaign is right to try and take this operation seriously.
I think they're taking it seriously.
They are.
Rather than try to beat him, they try to destroy him.
Yeah.
And that's just...
Well, RFK Jr. Does work out a lot, so we have to give him credit there.
Yeah.
He's got muscles.
And he shaves his chest. Have you seen those pictures that absolutely got on the internet?
Yeah.
Nobody
didn't,
here.
Didn't you ask him to do push-ups on the Fox and Friends set?
I think I did. Thanks,
Maybe
Carly.
Next time. See ya.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
You can understand why I gravitated to the Democratic Party. Because that was supposed to be the party of peace, the party of compassion. Many Democrats, we still believe in those ideals, but unfortunately as an institution, it has lost its way. There is only one anti-war candidate today. And you won't find him in the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. He is an independent, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Nicole Shanahan yesterday. She's the vice presidential candidate with RFK. And the reason why they did it is because they can't get on a lot of ballots unless you have a vice president named. It's all the hurdles that both parties put in the way to stop third-party candidates. Rich Lowry joins us now and knows all about this, editor of National Review. Rich, welcome. Your thought about the choice.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, that's the message that clip from her there, that's not a message that has to have the Trump people worried, right?
Yep.
It has to have the Biden people worried. And I think there are aspects to this Kennedy phenomenon that you think might eat into Trump a little bit, you know, the anti-establishment stuff. But the Kennedy name and basically his left-wing views on everything except for some libertarian issues and COVID stuff means that Democrats got to worry, you know, and they're not worried about him. They still got Jill Stein and Cornel West. So this is the reason why you have the multi-candidate tests, and Trump is even doing better in a lot of them against Biden than he is in the head-to-head.
It's interesting because a lot of people said RFK has a lot of these bings. He's against the Ukraine war. He's now for strong borders. He's been there a couple of times, and he wants to be different. And they thought, uh-oh, this guy's a mini Trump. And Trump's kind of wary about him, too, and maybe he's right to do so. What about the chances of him joining the Libertarian ticket and not being a true Libertarian? Does it matter?
I mean, I don't think that'd be a great move for the integrity of the Libertarian Party, and that's sort of like all they got is their integrity. But the ballot access thing is so difficult. It's got to be so tempting for him to get on a Libertarian ticket. And, you know, this is going to be a Libertarian candidate that's going to have more impact than the typical one. So they got to be tempted, too. So it wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, well, it'll help the name. But when people ask him, are you a libertarian, and none of the views of a libertarian are with, let's say, a small portion or what libertarians represent, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
So, but they got the ad. But you're saying they were on all 50 states. That would be the difference. So, all right. So I wanted to get your take on that. Also, a little bit of tightening of the race, going to the latest political poll in Wisconsin. It is Biden by one. It is in Pennsylvania, dead heat. In Michigan, dead heat. Arizona, Trump by five. In Georgia, Trump by seven. In North Carolina, Trump by six. And Nevada, Trump by two. Still things are going in the president's direction. Your thoughts about this point in the race?
I mean, Trump's in, I think, an incredibly strong position, given where you might have thought he would have been a year ago or 2 years ago. And the electoral path is clear. I think he's going to win Georgia. And I think Fani Willis stuff really helps down there. Arizona, you know, if the Latino stuff is real, it's almost too good to believe some of the polling you've seen. But if it's real, he could easily win back Arizona. And then you just need one of those big blue walls. And he's been ahead in a lot of polling in Michigan, but it wouldn't shock me if all those states are basically just tied and will be tied right through November and will be real nail biters on election night.
So, you know, in boxing, they say, you know, if you're a quiet guy and you're fighting a boisterous guy like Ali, and then you just start acting like Ali won when they got you playing your game. I think it's the same thing in politics. Joe Biden's calling him Broke Donald. Broke Donald's borrowing money, making jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You may say, well, he does that to me, but that's not your thing. That's not
exactly
the person you want to be. And by the way, being Broke Donald doesn't really hold. Maybe it worked last week, not this week. He's worth $5 billion more than he was, and the bond will be reached, we understand, in 9 days. So just for everyone out there, just to tell you what Trump's instincts on, and I think it's pure, it's sincerity. He reached out to the family of the 31-year-old officer who was killed in Queens. And he's already reached out, and I believe it's going to be, he's doing something else that's going to be out shortly. But he reached out right away. Because he's about law and order, and he sees a 31-year-old with a 1-year-old at home. He called already and asked to speak to the family. So that's good. To talk about panic, did you read the New York Times? It turns out that Obama and Biden are now teaming up. They used to be kind of wary of each other. It says President Biden is making regular calls to Obama to catch up on the race or talk about his family. Obama is, though, making calls to his chief of staff and to top aides about the Biden campaign and work on strategy. What does it say to you that in March, Obama is this engaged?
Well, I mean, they're all freaked out. Whatever they say in public, and some of them say it in public, you know, Paul Begal and especially James Carville very colorfully, you got an incumbent president at 40 or below approval. Right? That's where you lose. That's the losing zone. They all know it. They all know how rickety he is. They see it. They're scared about it. So it doesn't shock me that Biden and Obama are talking some more. It's an all hands on deck moment. You know, a lot of people, one theory out there on the right is Obama's running everything secretly in the Biden White House. There's no way. They can't stand each other. You know, Biden knows that Obama and his people had a certain level of contempt for him, and he's, you know, shown them, you know, he's won the presidency. So it's not as though it's a hand in glove relationship. It's a difficult relationship, but that they're working through it and trying to figure this out just shows they should be freaked out, and they are.
And they're going to use surrogates nonstop. And Rich, I told you this last week. I want you to bring it up again. If it gets a national review, I know it's got traction. Everything's unprecedented. Everything's unprecedented about this race. The court case, he's going to have to sit in the court for 6-7 weeks. Unprecedented. The bond, unprecedented. The fact he's a president coming back after 4 years, unprecedented. Who protested the last election, unprecedented. A president this old, obviously, you get the trend. So I say the president who's going to be tied up in at least this court case and maybe more, I say he names his cabinet and he just lets them fan out, earn money, raise money, talk policy, not generalities, how great Trump is. Yeah, Trump is this, and I'm going to work for him. And this is what the Department of Defense will look like. This is what our State Department is going to look like. This is what I'm going to be chief of staff, and this is how we're going to run it. I'm going to hire 130 people immediately to fill those spots that Obama people stayed on with. How do you feel about that?
I like it. It's the third week in a row, Brian. You mentioned this idea.
But I'm waiting for you to write it
up. I haven't totally stolen it and written a column about it yet.
Hey Eric, Pete, can you possibly, are you recording this? Because if it turns out, if this is the cover of National Review, do I have some proof that I can be, maybe, can I sue you if you use it?
You got me red-handed, yeah. Hire the Rona McDaniel lawyer, you know, and come after me.
Which is, I want you to talk about that if you could. I've never seen anything quite like it. She came on as herself. This is what I did. You don't like me as RNC. You do like me as RNC. That's fine. I went through cycles. Now, when he got and she got on the wrong side of Trump by having debates anyways, like she said, I have to have debates. And Trump did not like that. They didn't have enough money, so she makes a change. She signs a $300,000 contract with NBC, and NBC goes apoplectic, and now she is out. NBC did not even call her. I want people at home to listen as we flash back. Cut 17.
And look, there's a reason why there's a lot of journalists at NBC News uncomfortable with this, because many of our professional dealings with the RNC over the last 6 years have been met with gaslighting, have been met with character assassination.
But we've also said election deniers, it's not just they can do that on our airwaves, but that they can do that as one of us, as badge-carrying employees of NBC News, as paid contributors to our sacred airwaves.
The person who was the head of the Republican Party during Donald Trump's time in office and during his effort to throw out the election result and stay in power anyway is Ronna Romney McDaniel. The fact that Ms. McDaniel is on the payroll at NBC News, to me, that is inexplicable.
And she's not anymore. And the things they said about her and cutting her out, and then NBC not only cuts her, but apologizes.
Yeah.
Your thoughts.
Yeah, well, that Meet the Press interview last week, it was all just, why are you here? Why are you going to be an NBC News contributor? Justify yourself. And I don't think we've ever seen anything like that. And it was clear when that was the tone of the interview, and with Chuck Todd blasted her in the panel immediately following and blasted his employers, that she was going to be gone. You know, and then when you have everyone blasting her, what are they going to do? Keep her on contract and have no shows use her? She wasn't going to be on anything. But it just goes to how close-minded they are. It's not just that they need Republicans. You know, they have Republicans on the Sunday shows, but it's never a Trump-friendly Republican, right? It's hostile or skeptical, or, you know, someone like me. I'm not hugely into Trump, obviously, but they need that point of view represented. It should be represented, and I'm not a huge Rona fan, but she would have been a totally respectable representation of that point of view, and they just can't abide it. They can't stand it. And, you know, they pride themselves on being great journalists, but you're missing half the story and half the country if you don't have a voice like that.
They don't like that she protested the election. They don't like that she got involved in these different precincts and went out there and talked to delegates and did all this stuff. And in the end, she said Joe Biden is the president. But there were problems with that last election. And they don't like that, and they are crazy. They say it directly related to January 6th. So the host had celebrated. I could play that. But for people that don't like that Ronna McDaniel did that, and you're entitled to have that opinion, just like Donna Brazile gave questions to Hillary Clinton, conspired afterwards to make sure Bernie Sanders was marginalized, and then she came to our channel. I said, okay, not my decision. And she was on the five, going to Nashville, having a great time with the host when we were traveling. So she was part of this network, and people have been, our viewers didn't love it for the most part, but it helped our network get better, I think. I don't know. But it's not up to me. Rich, I don't know about you. I know you're in charge, but before you were in charge, when you were a columnist, I'm sure you didn't love everybody that was in. Well, you probably like everyone in the National Review, but maybe you didn't. Well, I mean, can you imagine writing a column about your colleague?
Yeah, I know. Well, it's just part of the degradation of our institutions, and most people don't have an institutional point of view. And what you were just describing with Donna, who's great, actually, you know, she's a lot of fun and is interesting and smart. You know, don't agree with her, but you're expressing institutional point of view. It's good for Fox, whether I like it or not. And that just across all the institutions of American life, most people don't have that attitude anymore.
I want you to hear some other people. Brian Williams. I remember him. Do you remember Larry O'Donnell, Rachel Maddow, Chris Hayes? Listen to some of their finer moments. Cut 18.
To a conspiracy theory going around that the coronavirus originated and was perhaps man-made inside a lab in China.
This question about the Wuhan lab, we know that it's been debunked that this virus was man-made or modified or anything like that.
A lot of people on the right love that phrase, escape from the lab, because it sounds like something from a Marvel movie or a comic book. Both scientists and the U.S. intelligence community agree that this coronavirus was not man-made. That is not a possibility.
The president is a Russian operative.
This cloud about collusion with Russia will hang over him no matter where he stands.
It does look like he's listening to Putin more than he is American intelligence.
We're about to find out if the new president of our country is going to do what Russia wants. The presidency is effectively a Russian op.
So why are they still in the air?
Yeah, I mean, Rachel Maddow, it was just night after night of conspiracy theories about Russia. It wasn't like a one-off. It was what her show was entirely devoted to, and MSNBC didn't bat an eyelash. You know, the upper echelon of NBC didn't care. No one else in the mainstream media pointed it out, you know. So it's why people are disgusted with the media.
Yeah. I don't know. You go on NBC a lot, though, right?
I don't anymore. I was an NBC contributor for about 2 years. It was kind of a typical thing. Let's have you on. You know, we want Republican voices. And then they heard what I say about a lot of this stuff. And like, nah, we don't like that too much. So it that wound down.
So you know, you don't have Rich Lowry either, and you don't have Ronna McDaniel, and she does not have an agent. CAA also walked away from her, which I just can't believe it. I'm just stunned by the series of events. Rich Lowry, thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Brian. Talk to you.
I feel bad for her. 1-866-408-7669. I have some calls for you when we come back. I went a little bit long here, but I do want to get – there were so many different angles I want to go with Rich. What do you think about my idea? Name the cabinet. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back. Got a few more minutes here. I do want to tell you that Joe Biden is going to get bailed out. Joe Biden's going to get bailed out by his surrogates. They have Obama and Clinton and him signing at Radio City. I think it's tomorrow. $100,000 you get a picture with him. So they got a ton of money. This is what they're doing. They're going to have Obama doing everything. They can't have his cabinet secretaries, but I could see all these Governor Shapiro, the Governor Pritzker, Governor Whitmer, They're all going to out there and really doing what he's not capable of doing. But I want you to hear some of the problems they're going to have, and that's the exchange. When they try to get go into these dicey areas, not only do they have protests from pro-Palestinian people, they also have some radio hosts who think that he's lost his mind. Case in point, WBT, Cut 11.
They all said, would you please just ask her, does the president have dementia? And so before I move on from that, does he?
That is an incredibly offensive question to ask.
But you know people ask it.
Costs have gone down because of what this president has been able to do. And with that, thank you so much, Mark. Have an amazing, amazing day.
Wow. Wow.
And she hung up.
Wow. That Mark Garrison. I mean, that's the expert. That's your crisis manager. That's the one that's supposed to be taking every question. You know, it's you could say, you know what, I'm a little insulted by the question, but I'll answer it. And then you just go over it again. And what happens is this guy now, this was a story was in my packet this morning. This is a story running on our channel. This is a story that he will run with all day because the press secretary, and it was supposed to be a friendly conversation, got asked a direct question. And you should welcome direct questions about the biggest story. And you know what? Biden's been told to take this on head on. He kids around about how old he is and how he's as old as George Washington and Lincoln and or that respect. So KJP feels insulted by that. That's not your option to be insulted by that. Maybe Jill could get insulted by that. But even if Jill knows that question's out there, she should want it. If people tell you in baseball, I can't hit the fastball, and you think you can, what you want is a fastball. So maybe it hits so close to home, they know that he's lost his fastball. Did you see him yesterday mumble his way through those remarks on the bridge? Did you also see that he said, I've been over that bridge countless times on the train? There's no train tracks on that bridge. You said that he drove back from Washington countless times on that bridge. That's not on his route to Delaware. So unless he was lost, he wouldn't be going over that bridge. He says stuff that is impossibly accurate. He tries to personalize it all, taking away the moment from the moment, whether it's the person or the incident. In this case, it's the incident. So I just wanted to share that with you. These are the people the president has on his time. This isn't the B team. It's the E team. And he's hiring people because of the color of their skin or because of the diversity in their backgrounds instead of the quality of the candidate. And he is paying a huge price. He's got a terrible team.
Do it now.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Like the guy with the deep voice says, I come to you from Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. This hour, we're going to be joined by Charlie Gasparino. He's going to talk about the business of business in New York City and what politics can do to your future and what New York has now done by taking out Trump to where they're or trying to take out Trump the way they're doing it right now with the $175 million bond, which we all assume Trump can do. He actually made $5 billion. On his new Truth Social app. But also the fact that they attacked him, they're trying to take all his assets and what the message is being sent. It's good to say in theory big business is moving out, but you'll hear from Charlie Gasparino to find out what the ripple effects are. Believe it or not, there's a lot of people in business that aren't left-wing Democrats who don't wake up every day and say, let's save a whale and build a windmill. Although saving whales is always a good thing. Let's bring in James Trusty now. One of our favorite lawyers. He's a former federal prosecutor attorney and former defense attorney for former President Donald Trump. And let's talk about what's happening with the Trump cases. Jim, I actually have a big slate and I'm willing to pay whatever the fee is to talk about various topics. First off, on the knocking down of the bond, even the Washington Post editorial said this is normal. This is the way it should be. This will help the perception and the Trump's chances on appeal aren't great anyway. Don't worry about it, Democrats. Should they worry about their appeal being overturned on the civil case?
Yeah, they should. But first of all, Brian, I know you're a big talker. I still haven't seen a single check or even a cold beer.
Right.
That's come over.
It's on its way. I just got to establish my line of credit first.
I just want the record to be very clear on that. but No. So look, I mean, when you, the only thing that we've seen litigated after the trial itself was a motion for a stay. And of course, the trial judge had no interest in granting a stay, but the appellate division, which is the next level, the appellate level of the Supreme Court in New York, said, we'll grant the stay, and they reduced that figure. The thing to keep in mind, a stay is not a perfect predictor of how you'll do on the actual appeal, but you do have to establish a substantial likelihood of success on the merits. A bunch of words. It basically means the appellate court has to have some sympathy to your position, thinking you've got a good appeal. So that's a pretty big moment that they granted a stay and that they knocked the number down so far. And again, this is lawfare. I mean, this is a zero loss loan application fraud where the banks want to keep doing business with President Trump. So I think the appellate process, which starts in the appellate division of the Supreme Court, could go to the Court of Appeals and ultimately has at least some chance of the U.S. Supreme Court. I think they may expose this for the lawfare it is, and it might end up being a pretty big win for
but,
the president.
But James, that would be great if it was law school and law students were able to analyze the merits of the case. I worry about it if the jury trial if they're taking from New York City, it's going to be very hard to find people that don't have a bias against Trump. And I know that's it's up to, you know, Trump's side to pick the jury. But will they go to upstate New York? Will they grab people from Long Island?
Well, I mean, starting point is we're talking about the bench trial with Enderon, right? We're talking about the huge disgorgement.
Oh, so there's no jury on that.
Yeah, that'll never make its way back to a jury. Alvin Bragg's case, you know, the criminal case that involves Stormy Daniels and star witness Michael Cohen, that's going to be an exercise in jury selection. Like the idea of picking a fair jury from anywhere in the five boroughs, you know, but particularly Manhattan, for a President Trump trial. I mean, it's going to be a hell of a moment to watch how they actually get 12 people in the box.
Does Trump have to stay through the jury selection?
That's a good question. I don't know if there's a local rule on it. I haven't looked that up. Usually it's in the defendant's interest very much to be there, to kind of be humanizing yourself and to show the respect of being present. So I'd expect he'll be there. And I expect that the jury selection, you know, you think about it, there's a real phenomenon in this country of kind of jury celebrities where they go and do kiss and tell stories on TV right after their verdict. I think it's a horrible development with President Trump in particular. And the notoriety of this case, you're going to get sleepers. You're going to get people that are going to say whatever they have to say to get on that jury. And you have to be a very aggressive judge and team of lawyers to ferret that out. So I think jury selection is just huge for anything that touches President Trump. And I don't trust the process,
James,
to play out fairly.
Yeah, James Trusty, our guest, and James is kind enough to go on Skype. So if you have the Fox News app, just click over to the radio and you can see the video feed. You don't have to just look at me for once. Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg announced this case. But you know the person who spoke the most when the president tried to get this delayed further or thrown out? Matthew Colangelo. And that's the person that President Trump brought up that shows that Biden's behind this. He was a senior counsel. He served in the Department of Justice under Biden. And before that, in the New York Attorney General's office, when he was put on the team to investigate the Trump Foundation. And then he's now back running this case. Trump brought it up. It ended up he's under a gag order because of it. But does he have a right to complain about the role of Biden if Matt Colangelo is running the case?
He certainly has a right to raise the issue. I mean, I'm not saying that it's a foolproof ironclad case, but it's a hell of a moment. I mean, there's a couple of things that really call into question these state prosecutions. And Colangelo came from the associate attorney general position, which is a very kind of political position within the Department of Justice, volunteers to go to New York. And keep in mind the timing. Alvin Bragg, prior to the end of 2022, had said this case is garbage, which caused his line attorneys to have a tantrum and write a book about how frustrated
Pomerantz.
They were. Pomerantz, how he couldn't go after President Trump. So then DOJ has this volunteer come to be the right-hand man for Alvin Bragg with great fanfare. And all of a sudden, Bragg changes his mind. And also, I would just add, you know, to kind of fuel the theory here a little bit, I was a local prosecutor in Maryland for 10 years before I went federal. We had all sorts of big cases as an office. We never got invites to the White House. You know, and it's really odd to see Letitia James, Alvin Bragg, Fani Willis. Of all the people in the world, these are three that get invitations to meet with White House officials at the White House. So Again, I'm not saying it's that there's going to be a lot of legal relief coming from this, but for a case this important, the optics are terrible, and right. I don't have any problem with the president pointing that out.
You know, my sense is you would say no anyway, because you want to make sure that people don't have the impression that you're colluding with the White House, that the case is going to stand on its merits. If Fannie Willis had had any type of strong ethics, she wouldn't go. Nathan Wade met famously with two White House counsel members in Athens, Georgia. He invoiced for it. Nathan Wade was the lead prosecutor in the Georgia case. And then you have Letitia James back and forth just trumpeting the fact that he's going to get Trump. He's going to find a case. Now, think about this, Jim. You have a situation where you're going after the former president of the United States who spent about $300 million, paid over at least $300 million just in taxes from his business. You might think he wanted to pay more. You might think he wanted to pay less, but he did, let alone the countless people he hired, the contractors, on down. Now, in exchange for that, we're also prosecuting Danny Penny in New York City, who's the Marine that tried to subdue one of these guys. And then you have a police officer get basically assassinated in Queens by a guy that's been in prison, has 18 separate charges, had two big stints in prison. So no one's getting prosecuted. There's no bail reform. There's no pressure to do it. But you got to go get Trump. Do those optics matter? Those realities?
Well, they do. Yeah, I mean, look, if you care about the fair administration of justice, I think this is why so many people have kind of rallied behind President Trump. You don't have to be a lawyer. You don't have to be a journalist to recognize that he's being treated differently than anyone in the universe. And the common denominator of those stories you're talking about is that essentially in New York, the prosecutors are so politicized that they tend to like look at the newspaper and figure out the headline to decide their charging decisions. And that's not how it should be. I mean, Letitia James obviously announced as part of her campaign, I'm going to go get Donald Trump. That is just flat out unethical for any prosecutor. But in today's day and age, at least half this country is okay with that. And, you know, until the goose is cooked on their side, they're okay with selective prosecution, with creative prosecution, when we ought to have, if we're doing anything involving anybody that's of the stature of President Trump, it ought to be the most transparent and predictable exercise in criminal justice history. In other words, they should say, look, we're not rushing the trial for political reasons. We're not going to hold back on discovery. We're going to be completely open book because we recognize this is so important for the system. But instead, we get the opposite from really everyone from New York to Florida.
CFO of Trump Organization, 74-year-old Alan Weisenberg, he went to Rikers. So that's unbelievable. He goes to Rikers and no one else does. Jim, a couple of things. Todd Blanche is going to head up the president's defense. Are you convinced that he has good defense against Weisenberg? Are you convinced he's got an A team?
Well, I don't get into commenting about A team or B team or Z team on the lawyer side just because I used to work there. I don't think it's a helpful thing for me to do it either way. But look, I mean, if you don't salivate at the idea as a lawyer, if you don't salivate at the idea of cross-examining Michael Cohen, then you're not a litigator. I mean, Cohen is just a complete, you know, impossible task to prove he's credible if you're a prosecutor. Now, in a New York judge, New York jury, who knows? But I mean, again, keep in mind, he's a failed cooperator. The Southern District of New York tried to go down this road to go after Trump. And by the end, they said, this guy's such a liar, we can't even give him credit for coming in and talking to us. Yeah. Alvin Bragg's picking up that kind of disgusting carcass and trying to revive it into a criminal trial. I think almost anybody could have a field day going after Cohen. You don't really have to go after the women that are the subject of the NDAs. NDAs are not illegal. I mean, if they were, Congress would be in a lot of trouble for the big slush fund they have for non-disclosure agreements. So, you know, that's not really the issue. It comes down to private bookkeeping and the word of Michael Cohen. And that's just kind of a laughable case in the abstract.
Right. I want to two more real things. Ronna McDaniel, I've never seen someone so blatantly defamed, it seemed, by commentators on NBC. She now lost her $300,000 contract and CAA walked away from her because of Chuck Todd, Rachel Maddow, Nicole Wallace and others who have said she flat out shouldn't belong there. So NBC walks away from her, doesn't tell her. CAA walks away from her and she has no contract. She's not with the RNC. Does she have a lawsuit?
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know the exact sequence of events in terms of the signing of the contract with NBC. I assume it was already signed. And so this kind of termination, is preemptive termination because a bunch of talking heads squawked, is probably something where she's got some real leverage. So she ought to be pushing back on NBC, not just on the principle that it's absurd that they are so freaked out by a contrary voice that they shut her down, but by the fact that she probably has a signed agreement with them already that governs this.
Jim West, topic, it's baseball. The best player in the game, maybe the best athlete in all of sports, is Shohei Ohtani. And he got caught up in a betting scandal. He's claiming now that his interpreter took $4.5 million from him and bet and got you wired to a bookie who is running an illegal betting service in California. It's not legal. And yesterday he made it clear, not me, not ever, no suspension needed. It was just my bad interpreter, bad judgment of character. Cut 33.
It's been a tough week for fans and team officials, and I'm very grateful that the media has been patient in this process. Just on a personal note, I'm very saddened and shocked that someone who I'm trusted has done this. I never bet on baseball or any other sports, or never have asked somebody to do it on my behalf. Ipe has been stealing money from my account and has told lies.
Ipe is the name of the interpreter. So is it case closed?
Well, look, the criminal liability is always fairly slim for the bettors. You know, like Phil Mickelson got in trouble in a gambling scandal, didn't have to worry about jail. There's a California statute, Penal Code 330, that seemingly has never been used against the athlete. It's used against the illegal bookmaker. So the criminal part between the federal statutes and the California code is probably fine. The league policy is the big question. But I got to tell you that the headline to me is kind of the lawyer Hippocratic oath being violated. He brings on a crisis management team and they come out with a completely contradictory story about the $4.5 million in payment, saying he did it to help the interpreter before putting him on stage to turn around and deny it all. And so, you know, that there's a real lesson that crisis management needs to go by their own clock and not be sped up by the media attention to where they create these errors. It was a horrible error. It undermined his credibility. And he's got a long way to kind of restore himself because of his own team mismessaging it from the beginning.
My sense is that bookmaker's looking at jail. And if they ask him, do you think investigators have a reason to ask him, did you think you were dealing with Ohtani? Did you ever speak to him on the phone? From what you can tell, has he ever bet on baseball? I mean, do you think that that's where you go? Is there going to be a motivation by the FBI to get the answer to that question?
Yeah, the gambling cases that are brought federally, and I guess there might be one coming out of L.A. with this bookmaker, they look for the splashy names, right? It's always exciting to be able to say athlete X or athlete Y or school X or Y was somehow involved. Really goes to the heart of the problem, which is all of this should be regulated, like the states that have legalized it. But the bottom line is they'll ask those questions, but they're not going to be settled with just the answer of some bookmaker if they have access. They're going to look at financial records. And the big lingering question is, okay, if the interpreter was wrongly sending these payments, 500,000 at a time, how is it he had access to your account? How is it that he wired this money without your involvement? And that's the real heart of the question, which could very much hurt, you know, Ohtani when it comes to the Major League Baseball reaction and the public reaction. But again, I don't see him being in any real legal jeopardy, particularly if he makes himself out as an open book to anybody that comes asking.
But the question is, if the interpreter says, look, I'm looking at 15 years in prison for stealing $4.5 million or even more, and if I'm covering for him, excuse me, that's over. 15 years in prison covering because he's really good at baseball? So those are two pressure points. The question is it going to be like Hunter Biden's laptop? We don't really want to look at it. Or it'll be, let's just try to get to the bottom of this like they did putting John Dowd on Pete Rose. Real quick, your answer?
Yeah, real quick. I mean, look, I don't think it'll be buried. I don't think anything will be buried like Hunter Biden's laptop for years and years and years of inaction. I think we'll have answers sooner rather than later. But it could take, you know, a year or so for the federal investigation to kind of shake out and give us more certainty. Yeah.
Baseball does not want to do this. They want to hold this guy up as the modern-day Babe Ruth. Jim Trusty, thanks so much. Appreciate it. And I just need your Venmo. I'll just take care of you in the break. I promise.
It's on the way.
All right, great. All right. Hey, when we come back, I'll take your calls, 1-866-408-7669. And at the bottom of the hour, Charlie Gasparino. Big day. So glad you're here.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
At about 1:30, a container ship struck the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which I've been over many, many times, commuting from the state of Delaware in our trainer by car.
Right. there's no train tracks on the bridge. And, of course, personalize everything. Someone dies. My son died. My wife died. I got it. But it has nothing to do with that person at Dover. Nothing to do with that cop that lost their life. And I know you take a train and you've been in a car. That has nothing to do with the barge that hit a bridge that's going to stop hundreds of thousands of dollars a day from being lost to that area, and millions are going to be affected with the supply chain. I had no idea how significant that bridge was. But I'm pretty sure the story wasn't Joe Biden commuting there as a senator. So I just am amazed by that. Is it a big deal? Not a really big deal. But it's just when you're going to pull away from Donald Trump because you don't believe that that he's correct when he says there's links between the Biden administration and these court cases, or stuff that he says about being the best, or how he feels the economy should go, you better just call this guy. You come back and say, listen, there's no train tracks on the Francis Scott Key Bridge. So he couldn't have taken the train over it. That would help. Just a little being candid. A lot more to discuss. We are talking about they are in the recovery stage right now to try to find what they think are five more bodies at the bottom of the bay. So we'll stay on top of that story and its effect. It's going to be a big test for Governor Wes Moore. If he can solve this, he'll become a national figure.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
All of these different cases, so ridiculous, the cases, every one of them is ridiculous. You take a look at any one of them and you say any one of them, it wouldn't make any difference. This is all weaponization of DOJ and FBI. They're all trying to damage Trump as much as possible. It's having the reverse effect, but maybe someday it won't. I don't know. But it's having the reverse effect.
And what he was talking about, the links, right? He says, you know, all these cases are coming at me. And these cases in the primaries propelled him. And one of the reasons is it puts him front and center and puts him in the news. Because he used it brilliantly. He gets to walk in. He gets to walk into his car. And then he goes into the courtroom. And then he comes out and answers questions. Joe Biden doesn't do any of that. And then he comes out. And then the case doesn't look that strong. And this is the weakest one yet. So the president got a huge win getting staying on the Colorado and all these other states that want to keep him off the ballot. He got a huge win there. Then after the civil case, it's got, to me, $175 million is too big a bond anyway. But for him, that to win and to have the immunity case get heard by the Supreme Court, that's going to wait. They're going to make their case in April, and they're not going to decide it till June. And that case is essentially, is the president immune from lawsuits or litigation if he's in the White House? So technically, January 6th happened to the White House. What's the big deal? Document case could be different. Now, the Alvin Bragg case is something that happened in 2007 that really is relevant only in 2015. And now it's 2024, and they're finally bringing it forward. And the president now has to deal with a gag order. So and this is about the hush money to not say anything because I'm running for president to Stormy Daniels. And the guy that made the payment was Michael Cohen. He says Donald Trump reimbursed me. Therefore, it shows that he knew I was paying hush payments. Good luck with that. And that's why we're in 2024 with a 78-year-old president worried about something that happened when he was 60 and that there was no plaintiff. This was just brought forward as election interference. So what I was getting at is the president always has said the White House has everything to do with this. And I brought this up with Jim Trusty at the top of the hour. But Matt Colangelo is a guy that was in a political position in the Justice Department under Joe Biden and then quit to volunteer to run this case. And suddenly it's reinvigorated. It's being tried. And he is leading it. So we didn't have cameras in the courtroom, but that's what Trump was saying. So you want to see a link between Biden and these cases? You got it. Nathan Wade meeting with White House Counsel happened twice. Fannie Willis going to see the vice president at the White House multiple times. They're still hiding most of those logs about her travel multiple times. So that is it. The president's making it clear there's a link between the two. Here it's having the reverse effect. I do fear, and for an election, you should too, that's playing, these cases are playing too much of a role. Just talk about where the country was at after hit with Donald Trump there, as opposed to Joe Biden. If you vote for Joe Biden, good luck with that. Here's Jonathan Turley, Cut 30.
What they're complaining about is that Trump didn't have to do a fire sale on his property just to be able to get other judges to look at this ruling. And the ruling is ludicrous. That is, the ruling is based on really speculative numbers by the court. You drill down, there's nothing really there. And then the problem, of course, is that, you know, the penalty in this case should have been a dollar because no one lost a dollar. The people that were the supposed victims, these companies, these banks, wanted more business from Trump.
So they did, but now they can't. And that's when Charlie Gasparino gets up here. We're going to talk about, is it just a lesson Trump has to learn, or is it another lesson? You know, let's say Jamie Dimon at J.P. Morgan, charismatic CEO, very successful. You know, he says everybody should stop putting down Trump voters. And when you put down Donald Trump, who did some really good things, you're putting down his voters. Can you stop that? Can you stop being so arrogant? Let's say Jamie Dimon goes from defending Donald Trump's voters to actually trying to win them over and running for president. Does he get all his transactions looked at? Do they look at J.P. Morgan's tax breaks that they may or may not have done? They try to find out retreats he was on that may be politically oriented, that he might have written off differently on his taxes. Who wants that type of scrutiny? Why would you do that at this point in your life when you're pretty much immune? You got your security around you. You got your used mansions, use your helicopter. No one asks you any questions besides things with a publicly owned company that you'll have to answer. But if your views are more conservative, are you pretty much persona non grata in a place like New York? That's the key. Here's more from Charlie, cut 31.
What the judge ordered in New York was supervision, and he could have stopped there, right? If you think that there's undervaluing and overvaluing, then sure, order supervision. But that's not what this judge wanted to do. This judge picked an arbitrary number that made it almost impossible for Trump to secure an appeal to protect his businesses unless he was willing to sell off some of his businesses.
So that's why it's good. He didn't have to sell off. There's nothing that's an election. The president says the fact that he's got to go to court is election interference. The president said $175 million. I can afford that, but I really would have preferred to put it into my campaign. Doesn't put a lot of money into his campaign, but this time he might have to. He's being outraised by about $100 million. And he is transparent. So is Larry Trump. Some of this money is going to his court cases. Here's the good news for Trump. Trump Media and Technology Group merged on Monday with a blank check company called Digital World Acquisition Corp. Trump Media, which runs the social media platform Truth Social, has now taken Digital World's place on the NASDAQ stock exchange. It's called DJT. Shares were at $57.99, up 16%, giving them a market value of $7.85 billion. Trump's got most of that. At one point, the stock was up 59%. Trump holds a nearly 60% ownership stake in the company, now worth $4.6 billion. So just as Joe Biden was warming up broke Donald, turns out he's among the top 50 richest men in the world. Oops, sorry, Joe. We just like to find out where you got your money. You can find out where Trump got his money, lost his money, bounced back from his money, the stuff in Atlantic City. Then he gets things on track. Then he starts selling off his name and licensing, let everybody else order, handle the earth and the buildings and the construction. I understand that thought. That was working well for him with The Apprentice overseas. People wanted the Trump name and the Trump quality. So we'll talk about that. Listen, Charlie Gasparino might have got lost, hopefully temporarily. I want to leave him some time on the other end, so I'll take a timeout. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
And the second issue that we have in this city is a severe mental health illness problem that was played out on 125th Street and Lexington Avenue at the subway station. And he was a recidivist. Severe mental health issues, indicators of violence. 50% of the people at Rikers Island are dealing with mental health issues, and 18% are severe. And then you add the random acts of violence to that. All of them played out last night.
So he was talking about, number one, with the subway situation is unbelievable. The man got killed in a subway. On the subway tracks in an unprovoked attack. The guy was just sitting there. This lunatic got off the subway and just threw this guy right in front of the train, and he timed it perfect in order to kill him. So it was a number 4 train who was entering the East 125th Street and Lexington Avenue Station over in East Harlem just before 7 p.m. So police said the train was unable to stop in time and totally struck the individual, adult male, whose identity was not yet released. The brother of the accused subway shover, blames the city for the fatal attack. He says he just got out of the hospital 2 weeks ago. We begged them to keep them in the hospital, but they said he wasn't a threat to himself or others. Mentally ill, 2 options, either they go to jail or they do something that lands them in a newspaper, and then they go to jail. They say their brother is crazy, but that is hardly making anybody else who died being thrown into a train. It just comes down to the whole system is totally screwed up, starting with but not ending with bail reform. And, of course, everybody's talking about Officer Jonathan Diller. I thought, you know, fantastic, 3 years on the job, NYPD. He goes in Queens. Diller sees a car parked in the bus lane. This guy, just 3 years of experience. He goes up to the car. Why are you doing there? They got you to move. He felt as though they were surveilling the business straight ahead. He told them to move. They weren't going to move. Next thing you know, they end up in a gun battle. He gets shot underneath his bulletproof vest, and he dies. Who are the people that killed him? Well, one, the driver was Lindy Jones, 14 prior arrests, 10 years in prison for attempted murder. Who was he? The guy that actually shot him, Guy Rivera, 21 prior arrests, 9 arrests for felonies, released from prisoner from prison in 2021 after serving just 5 years, was put on parole until 2023, obviously learned nothing, gets a gun, kills a cop. There's going to be hundreds of thousands of people in Massapequa, Long Island. They're going to be at Brady Park tonight. And, of course, hundreds of thousands will be in Massapequa the next day for the church service at St. Rose. And then they'll be, of course, at the funeral home, too. This whole city, this whole town, suburbs, if you're listening around the country, picture suburban America as Long Island. Picture the city as a city. Even though he worked in the city, he lived on Long Island. So they're going to show up where he lived with his wife and his 1-year-old. And if you could see those pictures online, I bet you Tunnel to Towers is going to be stepping up. They're booked for the show tomorrow. We'll have to see where it goes. But it turns out, not only did we lose a great person and we lost a great officer. Jonathan Diller had 70 busts in 3 years. For cops, they say that shows he's extremely active with great instincts. Pretty impressive, I think. So today, we had on to talk about this, the man that came on in 2019 when bail reform was put into place and said this will be a disaster, and that is Pat Ryder. He's police commissioner in Nassau County, where Diller lived, not where he worked. So keep in mind, Officer Diller went to Manhattan 50 miles, right, roughly, to Queens, went there, and got paid less. And Nassau County is one of the highest paid for police officers, and he should be. Cops, much more, they're challenged, with a lot more lethality in the 5 boroughs, Manhattan and Queens. This homicide happened in Queens. Here's Pat Ryder this morning. Cut 6.
So first of all, on behalf of Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman, the Nassau County Police Department, our condolences to the Diller family and the entire NYPD family. There is no such thing as a routine car stop. Anybody who ever says it has never done it or walked in the shoes of a officer in the police department. Every time you stop a car, there's a chance that your life could be taken.
He went on. Cut 7.
Both of those perps should have been in jail. They both spent one spent 8 years, one spent 12 years in the system. While in the system, they assaulted a correction officer. They don't deserve to walk the streets out there in New York City, Long Island, anywhere in this country. It's a bigger picture because it's bail reform. It's letting the prisoners out. The revolving door of the 80s has come back. We've lost support for the men and women of law enforcement, and we lost support when it comes to the tools that used to be in the toolbox. They're no longer there for us.
And the Democrats don't want to change anything. So what? They said punishment has never been a deterrent when it comes to crime. No, punishment keeps criminals in prison where they can beat each other up. So there's another area, too. So I told you about the subway and the horrible assassination of this police officer. And this is going to be a huge story. Do you know President Trump found out who the family was and called yesterday? And he'll probably have something else to do tomorrow. You don't do that because you have a political consultant or a good chief of staff. You do that because you want to do it, because you really feel it. Why? To me, New York, Number two, it's Queens. His dad made his money in Queens. He'd spent a lot of time in Queens. He grew up in Queens, New York. So it really does matter. It really does matter to him. And I think that came out. Pretty prevalently. The other thing that's happening, and I think people can appreciate this, is just random acts of violence that you don't want to go prosecute. And it's on TikTok right now. I hate TikTok. I think it should be banned. But in this case, I think it helps us because they did something that I think exposes what happens on the streets. Imagine just walking around the street and you get randomly punched. That's what's happening nonstop. Cut five.
You guys, I was literally just walking and a man came up and punched me in the face. Oh my God, it hurts so bad. I can't even talk. Literally, I fell to the ground and now this giant goose egg is forming and I'm like, oh my God, it looks so crazy. So I just got punched in the face walking home. I was literally like leaving class. I turned the corner and I was looking down and I was looking at my phone and like texting, and then out of nowhere, this man just came up and hit me in the face.
I literally just got punched by some man on the sidewalk. He goes, sorry, and then punches me in the head. Holy f***, what the hell just happened?
Yeah, so that's the stuff that doesn't show up at a police blotter. When people say, oh, crime's down. Really? For who? You might have some violent crime down, less bodies. But the day-to-day living, you know, well, living on the street in New York is tough. Well, how? It looks like it's no problem. Oh, no, it's a problem. Who do you know that would walk around a city and randomly punch people? It is happening. So you got to be able to take care of yourself, number one. You got to hope people are armed. Remember Stop and Frisk, and we said, well, that's a violation of policy. You're only patting down black or Hispanic people or women and whatever, you know, you're biased. Cops are biased. He goes, no, we went to problematic areas and we would do stop and frisk randomly. So everyone knows if you're caught with a gun, you go to jail. Plaxico Burress of the New York Giants, famously with Mayor Bloomberg and Ray Kelly at the helm. He had a gun in a club. It went off and he shot himself in the foot. Who's Plaxico Burress? New York Giants wide receiver. Stopped the perfect season for New England Patriots by catching that pass in the Super Bowl. Played for the Steelers forever. Big rangy guy. Shot himself. Went to jail. Blew up his career. Never was the same. But that was the old era of stop and frisk. They said, you know, you're being too aggressive. But what it did is it took guns out of the city. You know, man, I don't have to even do anything. If I'm caught with a gun, I'm going to jail. I don't want to go to jail. It's not worth the risk. But things have changed now. You just saw those aren't actors. People randomly punched in the face. Tell me if that happened to you. 1-866-408-7669. Paul Morrow, he's now a lawyer, former inspector with the NYPD. Cut nine.
It's easier for me. I'm a grown man. I'm a former cop, etc. But think about the commuters. A lot of women. I know that's politically incorrect to say, but I know a lot of women were very fearful of taking the subways, and it's because of things like this. And here in these blue jurisdictions, there finally does seem to be a little bit of an acknowledgement that we have a problem, you know, but that's not much of a victory because nobody's doing anything about it and nobody is really proposing any solutions. That includes our mayor, our governor, but most importantly, the legislatures.
Yeah, this Carl Hastie, I had this quote here. Carl Hastie basically says it's really no big deal. They're not going to be looking at it. So, you know, if Mayor Adams in New York City says the right things at times like this, right? He's made some statements. And I'll let you hear what he has to say just because I've heard it a couple of times. So I'll let you hear what he has to say. Cut one.
We have a real recidivist problem. Now, these two individuals, one of the men had been arrested on a gun charge in April 2023, the driver. He has more than 20 priors. The other has an equal amount of priors. Recidivism is a real issue.
And I believe he's sincere on that. But I don't believe he's done everything possible to embarrass these lawmakers into saying, this blood is on your hands. This guy's dead because of you. These mentally ill people, I'm not saying they all have to be warehoused in solitary confinement, but there needs to be something done. Those pictures should be on telephone poles outside their house. That's what I would do. Because I can't do my job if I can't lock up bad people. I can't honestly say I'm protecting New Yorkers, people of Chicago or Philadelphia. That's the issue. Keep it here.
Sit. From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Talk a lot about crime this hour. Let's start with Hunter Biden. He's going to be in Los Angeles trying to get all the charges against him. He's got nine of them dismissed. There's on drugs, escorts, taxes. Got it. Gun charge. Says, oh, he had a deal done. David Weiss came back on it. So I just want to go back to the old life when I was trying to sneak a deal through, just like I tried to snow everyone about my laptop and said it wasn't mine. And believe it or not, your dad said it on a debate and people actually believed it, not us. Bottom of the hour, Martha McCallum. But next is going to be Curtis Sliwa. I got to talk about while all hell is breaking loose in New York City and the mayor's response to it. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Diversity opinion is incredibly important, I think, no matter how much you might disagree with someone. And there really do seem to be double standards here. I mean, when 10 out of the 14 previous White House press secretaries have left government and taken jobs at TV networks, it's hard to see why else that they'd have a problem now with Ron McDaniel.
Yeah, but she's out. NBC, who's running the NBC asylum? A talent mutiny. Defamed, diminished, personally attacked, and destroyed former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel. And now management has caved and unhired her. Get ready for some Ronna lawsuits.
Number two.
The Democrats are concerned for two big reasons. First, Biden is having a very hard time just holding on to his base, which is why they've been so far to the left so far with the campaign. The second thing is that RFK Jr. is actually much closer to Joe Biden on policy than he is with Donald Trump.
Yes, and RFK is officially in 2024. An Obama intervention, just as the Trump trial is about to get underway, as he leads in almost every battleground state, making things worse for Joe. RFK is in and was just named a running mate.
Number one.
We have a real recidivist problem. These two individuals, one of the men had been arrested on a gun charge in April 2023, the driver. He has more than 20 priors. Recidivism is a real issue.
Really? Breaking point. A great cop slain. A subway passenger shoved to her death. And career criminals are to blame. Countless civilians arbitrarily punched. Americans have had enough of our lawless streets, let alone New York. With you right now, a man who never tolerates crime and knows where it emanates. Curtis Sliwa, founder of the Guardian Angels, and he had the Republican nomination to against Mayor Adams. Lost this time, but maybe not the next time. Curtis, welcome.
Oh, it's under horrible circumstances. You know, I made it to 70 years yesterday. Nobody thought I'd ever live to be 70. We had a great celebration, and then I told my wife, Nancy, I have to go. I have to go up to 125th Street where that poor gentleman trying to catch a train, like so many other folks in New York City, was pushed in front of an oncoming train by an emotionally disturbed person who should have been put in a mental health care hospital years ago, but left to live in the streets and the subways. And I will be out in Brady Park, in your neck of the woods, out there in Massapequa Park, to honor this fallen hero, Police Officer Dillard, who for 3 years had 70 collars. He was an active cop, risked his life for all of us, was shot and killed, and still continued to wrestle the weapon away from his murderer, Rivera, who was transported to the same hospital where he's being given health care to stay alive. And unfortunately, Police Officer Dillard passed away from a stomach wound.
Yeah, so Massapequa Park, take the train, Curtis, because there's not going to be the crowd. Everybody's coming.
Oh,
so,
no,
yeah.
I ride the LIRR. I'm surprised I haven't seen you because a lot of people tell me, hey, you know, Kilmeade was just on this train.
Yeah, I always do. That's how I get home because you can't deal with the traffic anyway. But much to the credit of the men and women in blue and the families that support them, they're all going to show up, not just New Yorkers, not just Long Islanders. Like you mentioned, this wasn't just a good guy and nice of him to give a cop. He was a fantastic cop. He was eyeing this car that was stopped in the bus lane, and evidently he was getting convinced the more he looked at him just sitting there, they were about to do something. So he walked up to the car, right?
And remember, the driver was the worst of the two, but the driver was going to give himself up. His nickname, Killer. Why is he named Killer, Lindy Jones? Because he did 10 years for attempted murder. And in April of 2023, he was arrested for a loaded firearm. Instead of incarcerating him, they gave him an electronic monitoring system, an ankle bracelet, which you know he probably sawed off. And they found in his car, after the death of the police officer, a 9mm in the glove compartment, which had been defaced, and that belonged to Lindy Jones. Now, he's the driver. He gave himself up. The passenger, Rivera, had so many arrests in the past, and I guess he decided at that moment, I'm not going back upstate. I'm going to take out this cop, because let's face it, they hate the cops. They hate the men and women in blue. And he decided to shoot this brave police officer. Again, I can't say it enough. You know, I've been shot 5 times. I know what it's like, Brian. This cop was shot, mortally wounded, and he's still wrestling the gun away from Rivera because his partner has shot Rivera in the back, but he's afraid that this guy might turn the gun on his own party. You know how cops are. They're like brothers and sisters in solidarity out there.
9 arrests for felonies, you mentioned. Released from prison in 2021 after serving 5 years for that. He was on parole that ended in 2023. So I want you to – you heard a little bit of it, but Mayor Adams thinks he knows the problem. Cut one.
We have a real recidivist problem. Now, these two individuals, one of the men had been arrested on a gun charge in April 2023, the driver. He has more than 20 priors. The other has an equal amount of priors. Recidivism is a real issue.
And he called on Albany to do something. Now, what's your take on his take?
Number one, recidivists have always been a problem because that's what they do. Their life is committing crime. He's got to name and shame his fellow Democrats. He refuses to do that. And sitting silently, Brian Kilmeade, planning his political comeback in the mansion of his brother, Fredo, in Southampton, is Andrew Evilize Cuomo, the author of No Cash Bail. It's No Cash Bail that led to all of this. And he dares announce that he might want to run for mayor and destroy the city like he destroyed the state. This all happened with No Cash Bail. He's never apologized for that. So what Eric Adams has to do now is acknowledge we are gripped in a crime crisis. We've had attacks in the New York City transit jump a massive 50% as subway murders surge, and they're not all by predicate offenders. And by the way, that's with an unprecedented surge of 1,000 more police officers, 750 National Guardsmen, 250 state troopers, and the crime continues. We have a crime problem. The Democrats are responsible for this, and Mayor Eric Adams has to name and shame all the people who are responsible legislatively for this, but he refuses to do so. And look at his numbers in the polls. Never has a mayor been lower in the polls. 18%! That's lower than Joe Biden! And he considered himself the Biden of Brooklyn. Look, the president abandoned New York City on the migrant issue, the illegal alien issue. He's done it on the crime issue, and still Eric Adams is going to go down with the SS Biden ship.
So we know with Biden, he's got people way to the left called the squad. We have one of them here, AOC, and this Bowman. What a character. No proof of rape or babies being beheaded on October 7th. He calls the... He says it's all made up, and he's now denying that. This guy can't get reelected. He also pulled a fire alarm. Carl Hastie, the speaker, assembly speaker in Albany, said this. I just don't believe raising penalties is ever a deterrent on crime. I don't want to make it sound like we're not concerned. We care deeply. We just have a different idea of how to get there. Your thoughts.
Look, Carl Hastie doesn't ride the subways. This was on behalf of the motormen, the conductors, and the maintenance people who get assaulted every day in the subway, mostly by emotionally disturbed persons and people who commit crime. And there are no consequences. So when you follow Hastie, he's in an SUV with state troopers armed assigned to him 24 hours. Kathy Crime Wave Holcomb has 150 New York state troopers assigned to her in different shifts. Eric Adams has a complete police detail of 12 armed police officers wherever he goes. These men and women are oblivious. They're not out there like everyone else. When I'm on the LIRR, when you're on the LIRR, we're by ourselves. When I'm in the subway, when I went up to 125th last night and was like homecoming for me, I travel by myself. These men and women who make the rules should be forced to ride the subway system, forced to walk the streets without a police detail. And you'll see, Brian, how quickly they'll change their tune.
I want to bring you to something else. New York City has begun handing out migrant taxpayer-funded prepaid debit cards at a Roosevelt Hotel Center, with 450 people set to begin receiving $18,200 a year. So if you, they're going to be handing them out to families. If you have kids under five, there's going to be a certain rate. They say it's going to save us money. Your thoughts about the message sent by giving people debit cards to come here?
If I'm in Venezuela, which is providing most of the migrants, most of the illegal aliens, 40%, I'm saying to myself, I better get to the border before they wise up and seal the border. Look at this guy, the TikTok influencer in Columbus, Ohio, Moreno there, who tells all the illegals how to scam the system. Don't have a baby until you arrive in the United States. He has a fake Social Security card that he shows. Oh, it's so easy to get a fake card. I get $350 a week from the federal government to help me and my wife and my baby. You can fake injuries. You can sue. He's taught you that there is an American dream, except you don't have to work a day of your life. And then he finishes it off with probably what he learned from Hugo Chavez and Maduro and socialist Venezuela. Hey, you don't have to be a slave. Remember that work is for slaves. Where you have millionaires, do you see them work? Don't humiliate yourself. You have to be creative. Ask for money. Take the money. If they're foolish enough to give us the money, that money is yours. This is coming from one of their own. And the Biden administration says, well, we can't verify where he is. Are you crazy? And this guy praises Joe Biden as his Papa Chulo. He says, oh, thank you. Thank you, Joe Biden. I have my baby here because of you. I get my benefits. And you know which country turned him away? Canada. Trudeau Jr. would not accept him and his wife. They said, no hotel for you, no benefits, no work, no asylum papers. So he said, I did the next best thing. I came into the United States, and now I get everything for free.
To joke. Lastly, while they're letting all this crime run rampant, while Alvin Bragg looks the other way on all this crime, they're going after Danny Penny, whose trial's going to be this fall, the Marine who subdued the would-be attacker in the subway. And they're going after Donald Trump and jailed his CFO, 74-year-old Alan Weisenberg, and put him in Rikers. Final thought on that. And people listening around the country, this is not just a New York story. You have your own stories in Philadelphia and Chicago and Los Angeles and San Francisco and Austin, Texas. Go ahead, Curtis.
Oh, what an outrage. On behalf of President Trump, they have put a gag order on him. A gag order. How do you gag the man who's running for the presidency of the United States, who's ahead in the polls? That's number one. In terms of Daniel Penny, he's on a train. The Marine, minding his business, he sees Jordan Neely, who had been living in the subway system emotionally disturbed for 5 years. Nobody cared about him. Nobody brought him to a mental health care hospital. He did what he had to do. Unfortunately, Jordan Neely died. And now you see this other emotionally disturbed person who pushed that man to his death. The pusher, Carlton McPherson, his own family said, we tried to get him committed. We said he's a danger to himself and everyone else. And the state, Kathy Crime Wave Holcomb, Eric Adams, and all the Democrats, they never listen to the families who say, we can't take care of him. They are emotionally disturbed. They need to be hospitalized. You'd be surprised, Brian, how many of our state mental health hospitals are empty. When Cuomo became governor, Andrew Cuomo, there were 30,000 beds. When he left, there were only 3,000 beds. All of them have blood on their hands because we need to care for these emotionally disturbed persons, put them in a hospital, get them their medication, and normalize them. And the Democrats refuse to commit them off the streets.
Right, and that's what people should keep in mind if Cuomo tries to come back. Curtis Sliwa, always great. I'll see you in Massapequa Park tonight, today.
My pleasure. I'll be riding the LIRR. Maybe I'll see you out on the LIRR.
You with your beret, you'll be easy to pick out, Curtis. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You got it. Martha McCallum's going to be next. Then we'll take your phone calls. A lot more to discuss on the slate, including the firing of Ronna McDaniel and the lawsuit that NBC will certainly be getting from her.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I don't think the people in Albany get it. I don't think they're ever going to get it. I think that we have to put pressure on Albany to make changes. It's got to come from the other local politicians that are out here. You heard Mayor Adams yesterday, and he came out against bail reform, against things that are hurting his community here in New York City, hurting his cops. Bad guys deserve to be in jail. That's where they belong. Let's keep them there.
Pat Ryder, Nassau County Police Chief, because Jonathan Diller, the police officer who was killed, is from Massapequa, and he was killed working with the NYPD in Queens. Donald Trump called the family yesterday in Massapequa and let everybody know, and it probably strikes home with him. Number one, he lived in New York City for years, grew up in Queens. He even knows the exact block. Martha McCallum's here. Martha, I want to just finish off this half hour just talking to Curtis about law and disorder and what could be done. You know, Carl Hastie, the most powerful Democrat in the assembly, has no interest in changing bail reform. Even the governor said, yeah, we got to change this. It's not working. So 5 years later, after they did it, the discovery process. So if I arrest Martha McCallum, I have a finite amount of time to get that case. If I can't get that case done, I think in 24 hours and get it all assembled, I got to let you go, or I can't fully charge you. Or you know what? I'm not going to bother arresting you. It's going to be too much of a hassle. I'm never going to get you in jail anyway. And then we watch these felons out there killing people.
It is remarkable. And I do think that Mayor Adams has, in many ways, the right instincts as a former cop. Kathy Hochul, the governor, rode the subways and said, this has to stop. We have to be safer in our subways. We have to send people back. If they are immigrants who commit one crime, they need to leave. And it is so pathetic. You watch what's going on in the city and you watch the exit of businesses. You see how many old stores and restaurants, you know, that don't exist anymore. So what are they thinking of? Well, they're not thinking about the future. That's for sure. They're thinking about their own election and whether or not they can get across another finish line and keep their jobs for another few years.
But this is the quote from Carl Hastie. I just don't believe raising penalties is ever a deterrent.
Okay. What does that mean?
That means putting somebody in jail for a long time is a deterrent. I don't care what happens to them. I want them off the streets. And if you want to make prison more of a rehab, go ahead. That's a different conversation.
100%. I mean, nobody learns any lesson if there are no ramifications for their actions. End of story. That is the same philosophy that has people shoving past National Guard in Texas because they know nothing is going to happen to them.
They've
had that message
in.
Very clear. Yes. They got up to the next fence, which was more of a wall, and then they all got processed. If I had a dime for every person who says to me, what is going on in this country?
It's so easy to fix.
How simple is it? If you break the law, you got in here illegally, you have to leave. I mean, I don't care if it's shoplifting or not having a kid with their helmet on the butt, which is why that guy was able to kill Lake and Riley.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
When somebody does the right thing, I feel like it should be acknowledged as publicly as we acknowledged our outrage.
It's not about hiring a Republican. It's not even about hiring somebody who has Trump ties. This was a really specific case. I'm grateful that our leadership was willing to do the bold, strong, resilient thing.
She aided and abetted in the biggest attack to destroy American democracy since the Civil War. And I have to say, I really appreciate working at a place that was able to say, we got this one wrong, and then made the right decision.
Christopher Hayes saying he's grateful to be working a place to say, we got this one wrong, and I'm glad we finally made the right decision. That's to fire that horrible person. Romney, she is now out. I heard $300,000, but they say $600,000 contract she had agreed to because Chuck Todd didn't like it, and neither did Rachel Maddow. She is now out. Martha, put this in perspective.
Well, I mean, off the bat, I would say cancel culture is alive and well at NBC.
At the highest level.
And it's just another example of, you know, sort of who rules the roost over there, right? I mean, if you're the leadership, right, you're the editorial leadership, you're Cesar Conde, you're the president of NBC, you got to stand by your decisions. Give this person a chance. In my mind, when I watched the Meet the Press interview, I thought, okay, this is the baptism by fire. This is a tough interview. Kristen Walker's a good interviewer.
And relentless on right. the one topic, January
Absolutely.
6th.
Absolutely. Fine. But, you know, sort of I saw it as this is the way to get past some of these issues. But it's like eighth grade over there, honestly. I mean, you know, people need to put their big boy pants on and understand that people have different perspectives than they do. They didn't ban Hillary Clinton when she said that Trump was an illegitimate president
over and
he
over
knew
again.
It.
Over and over again.
They didn't ban John Brennan when he said that, you know, there was absolute legitimacy to the Russia hoax and that he knew that Trump was compromised by the Russians. So why don't they ban these other people who say things that turned out to be lies, which they said as if they were the truth? And it is so infantile to not be able to have a conversation with someone like Ronna McDaniel, who's an RNC chair. She has a lot of experience with politics. She knows Trump. And she can speak freely about her interactions with him in that platform. So I just find it really disturbing. And we see at State Department, we saw, you know, they rose up, the young people rose up against on the Hamas Palestinian issue, and they all like get their feathers in a ruffle.
They
get
protested
scared.
The president in front of the White
exactly.
House.
Exactly. It's like, you know, if you're the boss, be the boss. If you fail as the boss, you're going to get fired. Okay. But you have to stand up on your own two feet and explain to everybody why you're leading in the way you're leading. And if you fail, you fail and you're gone.
So I want to give you an idea of NBC's reaction. It's even worse than you explained. Quote, there is no doubt that this is from the president. There is no doubt that several days have been difficult. The last several days have been difficult for the news group. After listening to the legitimate concerns of many of you, I have decided that Ronna McDaniel will not be an NBC news contributor. No organization, particularly newsroom, can succeed unless it has a cohesive and be cohesive and aligned. Over the last few days, it has become clear that this appointment undermines that goal. I want to personally apologize to our team members Jeez. Who felt we let them down when this was a collective. While this was a collective recommendation by some members of our leadership team, I approved and take full responsibility.
Right.
You know, MSNBC president also
yeah.
approved
so
it.
So he passes it off on two top editorial executives. Says, you know, well, they picked her. And then I just signed off on it. Give me a break. And this line, the news organization must be cohesive and aligned. What do you have to do to be in the line?
I don't know.
You know, what do you have to say to make sure that you're in alignment with Rachel Maddow and Joy Reid? And, you know, this hissy fit tantrum that they all threw and not one person stood up and said, you know what? I think this is valid. You know, maybe some of us have said things that we would say differently with the, you know, 2020 look back. But I think she probably has some value for us here.
Stephen Hayes, who we both know, I'm kind of friendly with when he was here. He was on that panel and they asked him too. He said, yeah, she was with Donald Trump and she was there the whole time. And he didn't really defend her or not defend her. But I think he was a little taken aback by what was happening. Number one, Chuck Todd just blew up the whole panel. I looked at Kristen Welker's face. She had no idea he was going to do that, in my view. Mm. And evidently, when she did the interview, they pre-recorded, she did not know she was signed.
Right. That's correct.
But she handled it great.
Yeah, she did.
Whatever you think it is.
Just be a grown-up. I mean, give me a break. Like, all of these people, you know, I don't know where they're going to go work, frankly, if the boss decides that he's going to stand by his position on this hire, you know, or just do the first year of the contract and see how it goes. I mean, and they could have every opportunity they want to push back on her and she could push back on them, because I thought it was very interesting with Kristen Welker. She talked about, you know, the fact that the 2020 election, you know, was different. It had issues. She talked about the number of ballots that were sent out in different states, which was an extraordinary change in the way things were done. And all of those issues are things that people do need to pay attention to and talk about as we head into 2024. It's unfortunate that some of these other issues clouded those realities of how different that election was, but it was very different.
And here's why it helps. And I know you know this on and off camera. So, for example, Kellyanne Conway's here. Now, Kellyanne Conway doesn't walk around saying Trump walks on water, nor does she think that everyone she worked with was great. So she thought there were certain people in the White House that hurt the president. Bad influence. That's her opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You have somebody else that worked for Trump has a different opinion. There's no cohesive school of thought. No one's getting on the same page, but it makes it for a better show. Kellyanne, Jared Kushner is not coming back to the White House. Will that help or hurt the president in the big picture? I know the answer. I can't wait to hear her answer. So you could even say within the Republican Party, Stephen Hayes knows some conservatives, goes to school of thought, but she isn't necessarily hooked into Trump.
Right.
And if your goal is to give people more insight and information, you need both.
I'm just picturing it's like fast forward, right? You know, this is going to be a close presidential election, at least it certainly looks to be right now. So if Trump were to win, so there's just going to be like a big, long panel on election night of absolutely shocked people. And maybe they wouldn't be so shocked if they had somebody at the table who had been telling them all along, look, watch what's going on out there with the Hispanic vote, with the black vote. The electorate is shifting, you know. So now that you're going to, if he wins, you're going to have another, you know, shock. Oh, my God. How could this possibly happen? Because you didn't listen to anybody who told you what else was going on in the other half of the country.
Right. And let's go over the polls right now. Yesterday, these polls released state to state. It looks like in Pennsylvania, Trump and Biden, it is Biden by one. Excuse me, in Wisconsin, Biden by one. In Pennsylvania, dead heat. In Michigan, a dead heat. Arizona, Trump is up 5. Georgia, 7. Trump is up 7. In North Carolina, up 6. In Nevada, up 2. So it's tightened a little in these areas. Yeah. So anyone who looks at this, as much as you hate Trump and wants to be in the news, you are nuts not to think the perspective of the Republican Party. And what would a presidency look like? Why would that be a block in your show?
As someone who co-anchors our election coverage, I look at this and I say, are you going to cover the election?
No.
They cut out of Trump's speeches on primary acceptance victory nights. I mean, you don't have to take every rally that happens across the country, but, you know, on a big night like that, they're going to cut away from it. So all I'm saying is that if they are shocked and their viewers are shocked, it's because they're only covering half of the election.
Right.
And I don't know how you do that and call yourself a news organization.
I want you to hear just a flashback to the false narratives that MSNBC's given out and tell me how many suspensions are coming up. We'll begin with Brian Williams, Cut 18.
To a conspiracy theory going around that the coronavirus originated and was perhaps man-made inside a lab in China.
This question about the Wuhan lab, we know that it's been debunked that this virus was man-made or modified or anything like that.
A lot of people on the right love that phrase, escape from the lab, because it sounds like something from a Marvel movie or a comic book. Both scientists and the U.S. intelligence community agree that this coronavirus was not man-made. That is not a possibility.
The president is a Russian operative.
This cloud about collusion with Russia will hang over him no matter where he stands.
It does look like he's listening to Putin more than he is American intelligence.
We're about to find out if the new president of our country is going to do what Russia wants. The presidency is effectively a Russian op.
Have they been suspended? Do you want to check your phone?
Yeah, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, through all of these, right? And I'm thinking about the current president. Why does he do so many things that are so favorable to Iran? Do they ask that question? Are they asking that question? Because these are things that matter, right? If we have presidents who are soft on their policy towards our enemies, so I don't have any problem with them bringing up, you know, President Trump did say a lot of things about, you know, Putin. He didn't push back on him in certain situations, push back hard in others. But ask the same questions about Iran and Biden. The COVID honestly gives me the chills. Who made these people scientists who had an understanding? All we ever said here was that you have to look at all of these options, right? I think one of the people, interestingly, who really turned the tide on the COVID lab story was Jon Stewart. When he went on with Stephen Colbert and said, I don't know, is it maybe because the Wuhan lab is down the street from where they found the virus? And there was like,
did you
horror.
See Stephen Colbert's face?
Yes. He was like shocked. And I think that statement by Jon Stewart honestly started to turn and open some people's minds to the understanding of what we now hear more and more based on the data. When they break down the virus and they look at the way that it was cleaved and they look at what was happening in the lab. So, I mean, what is the rush to judgment all the time on these narratives? You're not a news organization if you're not letting people listen to all the sides of the story. It's really sad.
Well, the thing that got me so angry during that time, I hate talking about the coronavirus stuff. But this is the whole debate about free speech and social media that took place at the Supreme Court was the coronavirus. If you said that, you were shadow banned or banned. So, and now this stuff comes up. Ivermectin. How dare you say ivermectin? How dare you say
Hydroxychloroquine.
Wow, good job. Hydroxychloroquine. Well, and the first guy that really brought that to the attention was Joe Rogan. Mm-hmm. He said, yeah, I got it. I isolated myself, took all this stuff. I feel better in 2 days. I'm out. And he came out, and they wanted to, and then Brian Stelter tries to marginalize him on his little podcast. Meanwhile, the podcast has more reach than CNN. You know,
it just comes so much from a deep place of fear. And in that moment, right, of course people were afraid. People were trying to figure out what was going on. It was a scary time. But instead of having sort of a cooler heads prevail approach at looking at all the different alternatives and how things have been handled in the past, you know, what we got from the White House was panic and cancellation of people who were saying anything different. And I think it added to the panic. And their job is to really try to diffuse the panic a little bit.
This is how great Eric is. Listen to this.
There was a chance that this was created in a lab. There's an investigation.
A chance?
Well, if there was evidence, I'd love to hear it.
There's
a novel
respiratory coronavirus overtaking Wuhan, China. What do we do? Oh, you know who we could ask? The Wuhan novel respiratory coronavirus lab. The disease is the same name as the lab. How did that happen? Maybe a bat flew into the cloaca of a turkey and then it sneezed into my chili and now we all have coronavirus.
I watched it.
I did too.
Yeah, I was stunned.
It was, when you cover these stories, there are moments and little tipping points. And I thought that was, you know, sort of a very viable version of the truth coming through in a comic way to an audience that hadn't really been allowed to think or hear it. And I think it was interesting.
Back in a moment with Martha McCallum's exclusive reveal of her lineup today. Is that true?
Absolutely.
Back in a moment.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
This guy was explaining how he did it in this YouTube video. He's saying that you get a fake lease.
Mm-hmm.
So you draft up a fake lease. You use that lease to get the power and things turn in your name. You pay the bill. Like, there's a bunch of different steps that you can do that just seems to indicate that you are the legal resident.
Right.
And then they have to take you to court. And it could be months. In months.
Years.
Before you even get a trial. It's so crazy that in the name of protecting tenants, which is important, you don't want a shitty landlord, you want to protect tenants, but in the name of protecting tenants, you're basically allowing people to steal people's houses.
Yeah, we're talking about squatting Joe Rogan. It's just incredible. But you know what? Governor DeSantis, again, showing great instincts, just made it tougher to squat in Florida. Mm-hmm. And I'll add this, Martha McCallum. The Governor DeSantis also put an age limit on when you can have social media and put pressure on apps.
What
to
a great
take,
move.
I don't know how they do it, but I'm sure he worked it out with his cyber team.
What a great move. I mean, there's a new book coming up by Jonathan Haidt, which is, you know, a real deep dive into the impact of social media and smartphone use on young people. And he really wants to start a revolution across the country to get parents to take charge and school systems to take charge in not allowing kids in young ages to expose themselves to this, because we know how damaging it is. So good for him.
Yeah, Jonathan Haidt's going to be on One Nation Saturday night.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and he's going to be on radio too. So hopefully.
Great. Yeah, he's such an interesting voice on all of this.
Yeah, Joe Rogan interviewed him on the podcast for like 5 hours. I don't know. Who's going to be on your show today?
We're going to talk to Rosanna Scotto, who sat down with Eric Adams not too long ago, the mayor of New York, and talked to him about what's going on. We see these heartbreaking stories, deranged people shoving people in front of subways, and this poor, young, promising NYPD officer with a one-year-old son killed by this criminal who shot him in the stomach. So we're going to talk about what's going on in
Jonathan
New York.
Diller.
And we also have a great media panel to discuss this NBC topic that you and I talked about. We're going to talk to Howie Kurtz, Joe Concha, and Hugh Hewitt. Great voices on all of this. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they have to say. I'm interested in this P. Diddy story. I think that this gets more interesting all the time. So we're going to dig in on that as well.
I mean, why would somebody with all this money and all this success, if you feel as though you can't do it musically, I don't know the genre of music, but let's say he feels as though no one's listening to his style of music. Happens all the time, especially in country. You see it with U2, for example.
Mm-hmm.
U2 put out three albums. Nobody cares. Mm-hmm. So maybe that happened to him. But why would your plan B be sex trafficking? I mean, that's the allegation. And what he's doing is, and what has been said to me over and over again, probably to you, is they don't raid your house like this, lock up, go after your plane, try to find out where you are, put your kids in cuffs if they don't have a lot. And one of the guys is his former business partner who he says he's soliciting and in some type of odd situation. Then, you know, I'm watching all these things where Usher was there at 13. Yep. And we're seeing all this thing about Justin Bieber over there. So you wonder if this is going to go down to Harvey, the Harvey Weinstein.
We should point out, I mean, none of the people that we just named are you know, said to be connected with any wrongdoing in terms of what
could
this
be
raid
victims.
Is. But, you know, we're at some of these functions that he had at his house. I thought the Usher comments were very interesting. He lived there for a while as a teenager and says that he saw some pretty crazy things. So, you know, pretty crazy things and breaking the law are two different things. But this is going somewhere. This was a major, major raid.
I don't want to impress you too much, but 50 Cent, that's basically the – and Master P, that's what I know. 50 Cent came out and said – he called him P. Dunn. He said they don't come into your house like that unless they have a lot. And he's indicated – they're in a robbery. Mm-hmm. But he's indicated – who's done time in prison. He's indicated that they have a lot for them to do. By the way, is it necessary to wreck your house like that? What if he was innocent? Did you see some of the video from TMZ? Every draw, everything is turned over.
No, and I was surprised that they were handcuffing people and then letting them go. I think that's unusual to see that, right? I mean, usually you might hold someone while you go through the house. I don't know if they resisted that. They might have resisted that. Maybe that's why they went into handcuffs. But, yeah, I think there are a lot of big questions here. So they better have what they think they have.
I've been watching a lot of cop shows, so maybe they're concerned about they were guns. So the first thing you do when you see somebody, lock them up. So I watched The Rookies, too, in the
70s. Are you a sheriff? It looks like you have a badge on.
I got one from Nassau County Police.
Very nice. Very impressive.
Martha McCallum, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
And for
always
all of you out there, if you're in the area, go to Brady Park tonight. A vigil for Jonathan Diller, who lost his life at the age of 31 on the job.
I'm Emily Campagno, host of the Fox True Crime Podcast. January 26th, 1988 was a cold and suspiciously quiet night at the Indianapolis Police Department, but the frigid night took a chilling turn with news of a triple homicide. This week, I'm joined by retired Sergeant Judd Green for a look back at this savage case. Available now on Apple, Spotify, and FoxNewsPodcast.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.